Devour the Podcast is for mature audiences only.
Devour the Podcast.
The boogeyman is real. It's real. And you found him.
He'll tear your soul apart.
What an excellent day for an exorcism.
Red Rum. Red Rum.
As you check with children.
I'll kill you all.
You're crazy. Kill you all.
I want to hear you scream.
I guess everyone's entitled to a fun good scare.
Hello and welcome everybody to episode 51 of Devour the Podcast. I'm your host Dave, along with me is Jamie.
Hello.
And with us as always is Beau.
51!
So,
woo!
This week we are covering the Theater Bazaar for our instant cue selection and Night of the Creeps for our feature, which is going to be awesome.
I think so.
I agree.
We got the Tom fucking Atkins action.
Yeah, right. So, thank you guys all for listening to last week's episode. The response has been super positive and really glad you guys enjoyed it. We enjoyed it.
It was hella fun. I hurt after that show. I was in such pain from laughing so much. That it was just, it was crazy. So, yay.
Yeah, it was hilariousness.
I can't wait to hear what Gil and Roscoe has to say.
Well, I will tell you what Roscoe said.
Right, I know. I saw what he said on Twitter. He seemed none too pleased.
He was just kidding. He's kidding. He loves us. But, and he knows we love him. But I did tell him, I'm like, for the record, you know how I feel about your accents.
I saw that. I really appreciate you throwing the rest of us under the bus like that. Like, look, yeah, they're assholes, but you know me. We're cool, right?
That's because those are my boys. I would never say anything to hurt their feelings. I love them.
So what does that make us then?
You're my boys.
I would say anything to hurt you people.
That's not true. First of all, I knew he was only kidding, and so was I, you know. But, I mean, technically, I didn't say they sounded like stroke victims, now did I?
No, but you laughed at it.
Guilt by association is what that's called.
Yep.
I laugh at house fires. Is that wrong?
Yes.
You would be found guilty in any court of the kangaroo variety.
Oh, Lord.
Which sounds like the most adorable court ever, could you imagine?
I know, right? With the jury of koalas?
You have to, like, do you climb into the pouch instead of get behind the stand?
I would think that the defendant would be in the pouch.
Ah.
You know, or maybe you're called to the pouch, like, Your Honor, I call Rue.
That's original.
I like Winnie the Pooh. What do you want from me?
Maybe the Joey pops up and slams the gavel.
Oh,
nice. The judge is
That would be, oh my goodness. That is the cutest thing I've ever heard in my life. Like, the only way that could be better is if the bailiff was a raccoon. And
like I said, a jury of koalas.
Right, just STD laden koala bears. Because like apparently that's a thing.
The shirt tails all of a sudden.
Oh. The prosecutor is a penguin. Oh. Anyway.
And
somehow I don't think this is a horror related.
No, not at all, but who cares?
Okay.
So, this weekend, which if you guys are listening to this, when this show comes out, you will hopefully be able to take part. We are doing a movie night. We will be watching either My Bloody Valentine or Return of the Living Dead. It has not been decided yet, but head over to the Facebook group. There is an event posted there on the group that you can look at and add yourself to. We will be watching one of those two movies and be doing either Skype or Tiny Chat. We'll see which one works out best. And don't worry about it if you can't make it to this one. We'll keep doing these in the future. This is just the first try out of doing a big group one. So I think that's it for business stuff before we get into what we watched. Next week is our year anniversary episode.
Woo!
And we will... There will be a special Leftovers episode sometime next week after either before or after the anniversary show goes up, possibly released on the anniversary, not sure yet, that will feature some various outtakes that have not been put out yet, and a incredibly long conversation that Bo and I had about horror movies.
Without me.
Because your power was out.
Oh, yeah, so nice. So, I mean, we missed
They can just skip through that part, right? You're going to have it time-stamped so my people don't have to listen to you.
Of course. Yeah. Careful, boys. This cat has claws.
Wow. Saucer of milk, table two.
Oh, Lord.
Get it. Okay, now I'm trying to... Fuck you.
Oh, last week you laughed at. This week you're pissed.
I'm not pissed.
I thought she was quoting Night of the Creeps. I was about to launch into the... You'd want to. You let me.
Yeah.
You
liked
it.
Yeah. But, no. What I was... Ah, oh, fuck it all. What was I going to say? What did you... Oh, the cackle. No, I was saying fuck you to that. What was I saying before that?
About time stamping it so people could skip the parts where you're not involved.
Oh, no. Oh, no. I was going to say that, obviously, I am very excited about hearing what you guys had to say in my absence.
Yeah, and we...
I mean, boys is always fun, you know?
Yeah, I thought it... I really thought it was going to turn into us making fun of you a lot.
Just because you wanted it to turn into that doesn't mean that it necessarily would.
The point isn't what I want. The point is what it was. And it didn't turn out to be that. Actually, I hate to say this, it's not because we don't love you, it's just it didn't really come up. You know, we did discuss you, but it was only in positive ways, and I regret that in retrospect, but that's where we are. That's what we have. So, sorry.
Suffer.
Oh, Lord. Anyway, so what did you guys watch this week?
I will go first. Okay.
Yeah, you can tell she's prepared because she's so eager.
Just like...
Watch me read.
It's like I'm the one that brought the condom.
Yeah, like, somebody's going to get laid.
Okay, so I watched The Howling because I was on episode 10 of Moviecopia, Yay. Which will be out tomorrow, and I'm very excited about that. Apologize in advance because I was really mean, but, you know, in funny ways. And I love Jesse, I love Iris, and they know this, so everything's okay. So that was fun. And then I reread the book also for that. But we ended up spending the entire conversation with Iris talking about Marsha. So it's kind of hard to get her past that, you know, when she gets stuck on the loop. But and also we're going to be recording Evil episodes tomorrow. So I had a bunch of stuff to watch for that. So I watched the first two episodes of The Following. Did either of you guys catch that?
I have seen that. Yeah.
Yeah. And what do you think?
You know, I'm so on the fence with it because there are things I like about it.
Right.
And at the same time, this is a show that could fall apart with one episode, and it hasn't yet, to its credit, but I still don't know yet. The jury's kind of out for me, but I'm into it enough to continue watching. I thought the first episode was better than the second.
I agree. And this is what I said about it. Well, first of all, I really don't like to judge shows based solely on the first couple of episodes because people haven't had a chance to sink into their characters yet, you know? So, and the writing is a little bit clumsy. Actually, I felt the show was kind of clumsy and a little bit all over the place. Some parts were really transparent and some of the acting was way over the top. However, I mean, like Kevin Bacon when he throws the chair, you know, and I'm just like, whoa. But I really like the concept. I think, and I really like Kevin Bacon, and I think that it'll iron itself out if Fox gives it enough time, which we all know that they don't like to do. So, you know, I'm kind of scared for it, but I would recommend that people give it a shot. Yeah. And I think it'll definitely get better.
Yeah, the first episode, the last 10 minutes of it or so, I thought were really good.
Well, it had some really brutal moments, too, which I'm very pleased to see.
Surprisingly, I agree.
Okay, so we're also covering the last three episodes of season one from Tales from the Dark Side. So I watched those, and I've been watching Face Off still. Also, well, Amish Mafia. I watched some Archer, just because. And The Abominable Snowman, the sci-fi original movie that premiered this past Saturday night.
I'm sorry?
Yes.
Abominable.
You should be abominable.
Abominable.
You should
abdominal.
Be. Because somehow this has to be
although I'm sure you're watching it for evil episodes, therefore it's Mike's fault.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It is for evil episodes, and yes, it is totally his fault. But, and it's really fucking bad. Like, they get worse and worse, I swear. And I used to love sci-fi movies. And some, you know, and occasionally they'll still perk me up. This one was, I mean, come on. It was awful. It was just, I mean, I don't understand why they can't hire new graphics artists, please. Someone has got to do better CGI than these people. But it's so bad.
That costs money. They
a don and a dull.
What? What, Bo?
Nothing.
Was it Susan? Now you're denial. Okay. Sorry. That's it for me. Really, it was mostly TV stuff because I have TV stuff coming up.
Bo?
Yeah. Okay. Before I do the watch this week, I do want to do a quick shout out to an iPhone app that saved my life tonight. There was a like traffic is always bad, but in this case it was terrible. And I've been using this app called Waze, W-A-Z-E. It may be available for Android. I'm not sure. But anyway, it gives you alternate routes based on the traffic volume. Mm-hmm. And I got home like maybe 5-10 minutes later than I normally do compared to the hour 10 commute I was looking at. So well done, Waze. Anyway, so I watched the movies for this week, obviously. Ghostwatch, which we discussed on the additional, the supplemental material. Rewatched Sherlock, A Study in Pink, the unaired pilot episode, because I was in a Sherlock Holmes kind of mood, baby. And following, and then American Horror Story, which we will, I'm sure, get to, because we haven't discussed the finale.
Yes, indeed. Okay.
I would also like to say really quick, yeah, I'm sorry, I meant to say this during my part earlier, but please make sure to tune in to Movie-copia, because I made a very special announcement on this episode. So, and there's a reason that I made it there and not here. it sort of fits. But I want to make sure you go there. And first of all, give them a listen anyway, because it's a great show. And
it
then
is.
Listen for that announcement. Okay. So there.
I should, like, we ought to do on-air plugs spontaneously. Like, hi, I'm Bo. You should be listening to Movie-copia. And apropos of nothing, in the midst of discussions, we should do that.
That'd be fun.
I listen to the Skeleton Crew show. Well, for obvious reasons.
You're on the show.
Not on the Skeleton. Oh,
yes,
duh.
You are.
I am. Oh my God. I meant to say the electric chair.
Which is coming back soon.
Yeah, Corey's coming back to podcasting. Woo. I'm so excited.
I know. So really quickly, did I mention the my new column that I started on air?
Not yet. No, not on the air.
Okay. So I started a new column over on Devour the Block, which will also be available on Horrophilia by the time you hear this.
Well, but it's called, David.
It's called Flip the Script, and it's basically...
I love the title.
Thank you. After a discussion of Texas Chainsaw 3D, where Alex from the Skeleton Crew said, threw out the question that I hate hearing most, because it's an obnoxious question, but he threw out the question of, well, what would you have done differently? Which, in principle, I hate, because that's not my job. My job is to review a movie and tell you what I think is good and bad about it, not what I would have done differently. But I took that idea and said, all right, well, what would I have done differently? And thus created this new column called Flip the Script. So the first movie I tackled was Texas Chainsaw 3D, and that is available to read. And I have sort of, the rules of it are that I have to keep at least one element from the film that I'm working on. In this case, I kept Gunnar Hansen, that is a direct sequel, the 3D, and Bill Moseley. And then from there, I came up with a rough outline of the backstory, and then two different directions the main storyline could take. So I will be doing those periodically, mostly for movies that I think were bad or not particularly good, not effective in some way. And the next one I'm doing is Freddy vs. Jason, which is going to be a fucking nightmare.
No pun intended. Right. Or possibly pun intended. Or perhaps there was no pun at all.
You're no pun.
So if you have a suggestion, feel free to send me a message on Facebook or Twitter for a film that you'd like me to try and redo. I am giving consideration to doing Smiley at some point, but that means I have to watch it again, and I don't know if I want to do that. Exactly. So, I watched...
Mask Maker.
Huh?
Mask Maker.
There's no way to fix that piece of shit.
Mm-hmm. Fire.
Erase it from existence.
It is broken beyond repair.
Pretty much. So, I rewatched Evil Dead, because I hadn't watched it in forever, and I decided to watch it on the Netflix. And that was really good. Oh my god, I forgot how good that movie was. Watched
yeah, I love it.
Party Monster and Party Monster the Shockumentary, both of which I've seen before, but I was just in a mood to watch something that I could kind of zone out to and just let it go.
I've seen Party Monster, but I haven't seen the other one.
The Shockumentary is actually really good. It kind of expands on more of what gets covered in Party Monster. So you get a little bit more backstory about some stuff and a little bit more insight on some other things and get to see some actual footage of the some of these people talking about stuff. So,
okay.
Very good. I watched Phantom of the Paradise because Gil and Roscoe were talking about it, and I had to watch it because it's a great movie. I watched Leatherface Texas Chainsaw Massacre 3, which isn't bad. It's just problematic. And I kind of went into this in my article about TCM 3D that I don't think there should be sequels to the Texas Chainsaw Massacre for various reasons. And I don't think Texas Chainsaw Massacre 3 is bad. It just doesn't make a whole lot of sense within continuity.
No, absolutely not. They completely abandoned continuity.
Right.
You know, and they made no apologies for it, which I do kind of respect. Like, I typically that might bother me, but for some reason in the Chainsaw series, it doesn't bother me. Like, because I enjoy them so much. Like, I love the third one. The second one is crazy. But I love it,
yeah.
You know, and the third one is just what? But I love it. Like Viggo Mortensen, I mean, come on, that is awesome.
Yeah, he was really
and
good.
He is such a good actor. And even back then, I thought he was really impressive. Mm-hmm. Plus it had quite a good bit of humor. And like, you know, just the little things like when they have the one guy hanging up and they're like, look, Ma, colored drawers, California, yeah. You know. Do you wear colored drawers, David?
Yes, I do. Also, it was written by David J. Show, so, you know, he's got some, he also wrote The Crow, and...
He's got some
credit. He does. I think he wrote Nightmare 5, or he worked on Nightmare 5.
Kind of a splatterpunk mm-hmm. author.
I think he was the one who coined the phrase, actually.
It sounds
if
right.
I remember correctly.
Sounds right.
And then also, I watched about 45, 50 minutes of Freddy vs. Jason the other night, and it's... about that point where I have to stop it because it stops making sense at that point. Like, the first 45 minutes or so are pretty good, and I have some minor gripes about it. Like, there's some CG use that I think is unnecessary, and I'm not crazy about some of the casting or some of the directing or other nitpicky things, but for the most part, that first 45 minutes is pretty solid and works all right for me. And then they break into Weston Hills. And from there on, it's just a downward slide of stupid.
Oh, man. I remember when that movie came out, I was camping that weekend. And so we went to the campsite, and totally unrelated. I mean, it just, when I planned the camping trip, I didn't even realize the movie was coming out when it was. But so I was camping, but then, like, you know, I knew that Freddy vs. Jason was coming out, and I was like, well, I have to see it opening night. I can't not. So we went to the campsite. We, you know, put everything up and got everything settled in. And then we went right back out and went to the movies. And I just remember, oh, the crowd was so rude the whole time. I mean, and it wasn't even like they were laughing at the movie or complaining about the movie or anything. It was just this low murmur throughout the theater the entire time. And I'm like, oh my God, shut up. But it was actually kind of cool because when we got back, I mean, not the movie, but well, there are things about it I liked. But when we got back, it was kind of cool to then, because then I realized, like, hey, I just watched Freddy versus Jason and I'm about to sleep in the woods. So it was kind of fun.
So you see how the two things. Woods.
Yeah, and sleep.
Jason camping.
Freddy sleeping.
Freddy died
or dreaming.
Fire. Jason by water. How can we use this? God, I hate that fucking line. And it's one of those things where it's like the guys who wrote that film, I think they say it was in either the Nightmare documentary or his name was Jason, that the director changed a lot of the script and there was stuff in this that came out in the movie that they hadn't written. And I was like, oh, okay, well, that's cool. You guys kind of got fucked on that. But then they also wrote the Friday the 13th remake. So I don't know how much of that I can trust. It's like, you guys wrote two bad slasher movies, so I don't know if I can trust you.
Right. Yeah, you do it once, shame on you, or no, shame on me. Right. Fool me, won't get fooled again.
Right. Thank you, George W.
Got some brush to clean.
All right, so let's go ahead and talk about some American Horror Story finale.
Yeah, let's do that.
Dick!
Stop it. Yeah, okay, so I know you have said publicly already that you're, at least at the time of the viewing and shortly thereafter, you were a bit on the fence. You weren't sure how you felt
yes.
about it. Has that changed?
I have not watched it since, but still thinking about it, I'm still kind of unsure how I feel about it.
I kind of dug it because it really puts a button on everything in a way that the first season didn't. Mm. And I'm pretty forgiving because that show is just full of such crazy bullshit right. that how do you wrap it up? And I thought by making it really the story that had been kind of teased along the way of the son of Bloody Face returning to his mother, I thought all that stuff was fun. Mm-hmm. And further, I thought that even doing that sort of Animal House style, what happened to each character, was satisfying enough, particularly the Jessica Lange character. Right. I thought that was a nice wrap up for that character. So I liked it. I don't think it was perfect, but American Horror Story isn't about perfection. It's about, you know, again, that kitchen sink approach to storytelling where you just kind of throw everything out there. And I thought it was a more satisfying resolution than the end of season one.
Right. Yeah, there were things about it that I liked. For the most part, I was on board with it until we got to the Bloody Face son and Lana kind of meeting sequence. Like that whole thing. And then the very end was just sort of like, huh? Like I was fine with Sister Jude's wrap up and, you know, with Kit's wrap up and all that stuff was fine and great. And then we kind of have this anticlimactic finish with Lana and her son. And it's like, what? Really? And then it just sort of closes out on 1960s Briarcliff again. And I'm like, what? So,
yeah, I found it satisfying enough, you know, the whole thing with Lana and her son, because it thematically worked in that every character is sort of wrapping up the fallout from Briarcliff. Mm-hmm. And that was really the last lingering remnant of Lana's, you know, psychological distress, maybe, you know, or at least her ties to that time in her life was her crazy fucking son running right. around. And so, to me, the whole episode was about like, we're going to end Briarcliff, you know, even though it's been shut down for years and years and years, we're now dealing with the fallout of it and resolving that. And so for on that level, it worked for me just fine.
Yeah, it may just be something that when I rewatch this season sort of straight through, I think the ending might work better for me.
Yeah.
You know, as a kind of as the chunks we audit every week, it's one of those things where I think this season will work a lot better as a whole than as episodes as it was, because that break in between is really kind of a killer.
We're going to first of all, well, I agree mostly with pretty much everything you said. Pretty much. But we're going to be covering the entire season on a special episode of Evil Episodes. And we have a new co-host. There, we have some really exciting stuff that's going to be happening on EE. But anyway, we have a new co-host. And so what I'm going to do is I'm going to rewatch the entire season, like just marathon it. And I really am looking forward to that, because what I found with this show is that from week to week, they would get so jumbled in my head sometimes, like what happened exactly on which, like I couldn't tell you now, like which episode something happened right. on, you know, because to me it was just like it would just blend it.
I can't tell you what happened in most of the beginning of the season, honestly.
Yeah, I don't have a clue about some, or at least if you ask me what episode would, you know, like, when did this happen? I don't know. You know, and I remember it, sort of, but I don't remember when it happened. So I'm really anxious to sit down and watch them all in close proximity and see how much of a difference that makes. That's it.
Anyway, does anybody else have any thoughts about American Horror Story before we move on?
You know, just to take the season as a whole, I just want to reiterate how much more I love season two versus
season one,
which was fine. But man, this season really did it for me. I'm on board now. And when they sort of tease the idea that maybe season three is about witches, I was like, fuck yeah, American Horror Story. Let's do this. Yeah. American Horror Story. Coven.
Yeah. Oh, there was actually a
nice one, Bo. I love it. Nice callback.
There was a little news bit that Ryan Murphy apparently teased that there was there was an idea that was kicked around for like 10 minutes apparently, where the end of Asylum was going to tie into season one with Bloodyface's son, Dylan McDermott's character. He was actually going to be his character from season one, that he had just changed his name and become this other person for season one. But then they scrapped that idea, and I was like, that could have been cool, but I don't know if that would have worked.
I mean, those characters are so wildly different.
It's like, it would have been kind of interesting to go, oh, that's kind of cool, but then at the same time, it's like, they're totally... That's a retcon you kind of can't make at this point.
Yeah.
That's something you would have had to seriously like lay the foundation for last season. For it to work this season.
Yeah, I agree. I think, I mean, as crazy as the show is, I think that might be a bridge too far.
So, okay. Is that it? All the pre-show business we have?
I think so.
Yeah. Let's get into the theater bazaar. Or, oh no, it's news
the
first.
News.
I'm sorry. I was so excited about another anthology.
Which is exactly the same thing I said when I started watching it. I'm like, oh boy!
Another anthology. Yay! Yeah.
Okay. Well, yeah. But first, I'm sorry, Bo. You'll have to hold your horses because first we have to cover the news. Yep.
So we'll be right back with the news.
Our show is now on Stitcher. Stitcher is smart radio for your phone. Listen to us on your iPhone, Android phone, Kindle Fire, and other devices with Stitcher. Find it in your app store or at Stitcher.com. Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio.
Good evening.
It's 8 o'clock in Los Angeles. It's 9 o'clock in Denver. It's 10 o'clock in Chicago.
In Baltimore, it's 6:42. Time for the 11 o'clock report.
Here's Johnny.
Civil defense officials in Cumberland have told newsmen that murder victims show evidence of having been partially devoured.
Sure, I'll do it for $50.
Beware the moon, David.
The power of Christ compels you! The power of Christ compels you!
Holy shit! She's a friend of mine!
Okay, and welcome back. It's time for the news. The first story this week is really exciting, and I know that, well, both of you guys will be really excited, and most fans out there, I think, because people are really, really, really anxious about this one. But Bruce Campbell, who serves as a producer on the Evil Dead remake, announced via Twitter, and I quote, "The world cannot wait. The Evil Dead remake launches 1 week earlier, and so it has now been moved to April 5th. Of 2013. You demanded it. You got it." And it was originally, of course, slated to premiere on April 12th, but they are giving us 1 week earlier.
Yay.
And
I'm
that. I mean, usually it's totally opposite from everything else. You know, it's always like, oh, this movie's being pushed back. Mm-hmm. Oh, this movie's being pushed back. Well, then you're going to have to wait another year and then blah, blah, blah. But this one is like, nah, you know what? We're done, so you can have it.
Yeah, it's incredibly rare that we get movies early. It's always, like you said, it's always getting pushed back, or we occasionally get like on VOD or iTunes early, but not usually a theatrical like release date being bumped up like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, the rumor I heard was that they didn't want to go up against some Tom Cruise movie that's being released the same week, so they moved it up so that their only direct competition was Jurassic Park 3D. And let's face it, those are two different audiences entirely.
I still want to see Jurassic Park 3D. I didn't get to see it in the theater when I was a kid, so I want to see it in the theater in 3D.
Aww. Oh, spare no expense.
Man, that was badass. It really was. Like, that was that movie just changed everything.
Yeah. See, and that was at a time when I was really into dinosaurs, but my mom thought it might scare me, so she didn't take me. I was like, damn it! But I did see it on VHS, so it's a great movie. And I saw the sequels in the theater, which was disappointing.
Sure, sure. No, nowhere near as good. But the other bit of news, I don't want to get ahead of you, Jamie, about the rating coming down as an R. Are we going to talk about that, or is that the time?
Yes, we are, Captain Tron. Jesus Christ.
Whoa! Easy, everybody.
You seriously, like, troned out like crazy there while you were talking.
Sorry.
It's okay. It happens.
Okay, yeah. Just be patient, sweetie. We're getting there.
I don't want to be patient.
Oh, you're so cute. Okay, well, speaking of the Evil Dead remake, I've got more news about that, as well as the Lords of Salem, as they have both gotten their official ratings. So now you guys know whether or not you're old enough to go see it. Strong bloody violence and gore, some sexual content, and language. That's what got the official R rating for the Evil Dead remake. A report earlier this week said that the MPAA slapped the film with an NC-17. Bodes well because it means Fede Alvarez isn't fucking around, but it also means that he had to make some cuts to get an R rating so the film could be released. Expect a bloodier director's cut on Blu-ray at some point. And of course, I mean, that's pretty much what we're used to these days, you know, we see the theatrical version and then we know that we're going to get an uncut version on Blu-ray. But as for Rob Zombie's The Lords of Salem, an R rating, naturally, the MPAA states the film has, quote, disturbing, violent, and sexual content, graphic nudity, language, and some drug use. Well, I love it already. Look for that depravity on April 26th.
Yay.
And I seem to think that an official trailer is supposed to be coming out sometime this week.
Awesome.
So by the time you guys hear this, it will theoretically have come out, hopefully.
Cool. All right, moving on now. And you guys...
Whoa, whoa, what? Before we move on.
Okay.
I just wanted to say I was reading some stuff that Alvarez was saying about the cut from NC-17 to R. Huh? And he did say... Nothing you saw in the trailer was cut in any way, which was a Red Band trailer and was brutal as hell.
Right.
And also, let's not forget that many directors build in those extreme things, knowing, hey, these are the things that are going to get cut,
right,
which means they'll leave this other thing alone.
Right. Oh, yeah. And so, that's pretty common. I think if they're like, I'll distract him over here with this thing that I don't even really want, you know, throw steak to the guard dog.
Right, I think Matt Stone and Trey Parker made a big deal about that when they did Team America. Like, they added all that ridiculous extra puppet sex scenes, and they're like, we didn't even want this stuff. We just put it in there so they would leave us the fuck alone.
Right.
Yeah. That's awesome. Mm-hmm. Well, good, because I hate when I see a trailer and I get really excited about something that's in the trailer, and then I go to the movie and it's not in the movie. Mm-hmm. I'm like, what the fuck? You know, I will never forgive the Money Pit for that. Because there is a scene in the original trailer for The Money Pit where Tom Hanks is standing on the curb and he threatens to jump. And if Shelley Long does not comply with his wishes at that moment. And that is not in the movie. And that's the best example I have.
Right, right. A movie that probably half our listeners have never heard of and the other half are like, you saw The Money Pit?
I have The Money Pit on DVD.
Well, the other one that horror fans would probably know is that when Freddy vs. Jason came out, there was the line in the trailer where, what's her name, Lori, the stupid blonde girl, says, place your bets, not in the film.
Ah, there you go. Yeah, I hate that shit. Mm-hmm. All right. Okay, this next bit of news has me super excited, but you guys are going to have to stand in line behind me because, like, I want this. The Last House on the Left soundtrack is coming out on vinyl, and I'm so excited. Belgium-based One Way Static Records will release the original motion picture soundtrack from Wes Craven's 1972 shocker, The Last House on the Left, this year. The score was composed and performed by the late David Hess, and this release will be fully dedicated to his memory, life, and career as both an actor and musician, who passed in 2011. The label teamed up with director Wes Craven, producer Sean Cunningham, and the Hess family to make the release possible. Expect the package to contain the full original score, which will be available on a deluxe gatefold vinyl edition with printed inner sleeve, a Digipak CD version, and digital download with digital booklet will be included as well. The vinyl version will contain 17 tracks, the complete original score, and the CD/download version will consist of 21 tracks, containing four bonus tracks, from which three tracks are alternate cuts that didn't make it in the movie, and one being a cover song of Wait for the Rain by David Hess's sons, Jesse and Beau. Huh, I didn't know you were related.
What?
There will also be a limited hand-numbered version of the vinyl release on color vinyl with an extreme bonus flexi containing the original 1972 radio spots for the movie. All versions will contain extensive liner notes written by people involved in David's career and the movie, family, friends, agents, directors, musicians, actors, cast, and crew. There is no release date set yet, but we expect it to be available in the first half of 2013. And if that is true, then it's just in time for someone to get it for my birthday. Because want. Anybody else excited about that at all? No? All right.
You know, it's been so long since I've seen that movie. I don't really recall the soundtrack being,
right,
you know, a big deal. But it's been a long time. I don't want to short sell it at all.
Well, mainly it's because I'm a big David Hess fan. And I just think that's really awesome. I mean, like, all the stuff, that is just really cool. That's, wow.
Yeah, it sounds really awesome. If I honestly don't remember, like I said, like Bo says, I haven't seen the movie recently enough to remember the soundtrack, but it's definitely something that would be kind of interesting to own. I don't have a turntable, unfortunately. I've wanted one for a while, but I just can't afford it.
A microphone.
So... But I like that they're releasing a CD digital copy as well with the bonus tracks and stuff, so.
Okay. Yeah, that's cool. Sorry, I actually didn't hear that last part because I was too busy making lame jokes. The Dracula series sinks its teeth into two more. NBC is at work on a 10-part Dracula series with Jonathan Rhys Meyers playing the eponymous bloodsucker. Deadline reports today that the Greys, Nonso Anozzi, and Katie McGrath of Merlin have joined the cast. Jessica DeGaulle co-stars alongside Meyers on this series, in which Dracula, played by Meyers, arrives in London posing as an American entrepreneur who maintains that he wants to bring modern science to Victorian society. In reality, he hopes to wreak revenge on the people who ruined his life centuries earlier, but falls hopelessly in love with a woman who seems to be a reincarnation of his dead wife. So basically Dracula, you know?
But so basically they're just remaking Coppola's film into a TV series?
In modern day.
Woo.
Or no, it's Victorian.
Is it?
They said Victorian London.
To bring modern science to Victorian society. So yeah, it's... I guess. Yeah. Okay, well, and the big monsters I have more news involving one of the original. I mean, you know, there's something special about those first Universal films, mm-hmm. that those monsters will always be the iconic original monsters, you know. So next up, I have some news about Frankenstein. Frankenstein Theory is arriving this March. Image Entertainment is bringing Andrew Weiner's The Frankenstein Theory to VOD and select theaters on March 1st, with the DVD release set for March 26th. What if the most chilling novel of all time was actually based on a true account of a horrific experiment gone awry?
What?
Well, I'll tell you, when he is suspended from his university job for his outlandish ideas, Professor John Vankenheim leads a documentary film crew to the rim of the Arctic Circle in a desperate effort to vindicate his academic reputation. The object of his ridicule? His obscure theory that Shelley's literary classic is, in fact, a work of nonfiction disguised as fantasy. In the vast, frozen wilderness, Vankenheim and his team search for the legendary monster, a creature nearly 300 years old and still cloaked in mystery. What they find is an unspeakable truth more terrifying than any fiction.
Robert De Niro dressed in a trench coat?
Yeah. Well, that's funny, because as soon as they start talking about the, you know, the Arctic Circle portion of the story, that is what immediately comes into my head.
Mm-hmm. Well, all right. I don't think you can rewrite the origin story of Frankenstein as a piece of fiction, because the story of how it came to be, I think, is so... Maybe I'm wrong, but to me, that seems like a very common knowledge sort of thing, that it basically came out of a drug-fueled weekend.
Right.
And, yeah, I don't
only
know.
Only horror fans and literary nerds know that.
I'm both of those things.
Well, exactly.
You are, and so am I, and so is David, mm-hmm. And we know that. But, I mean, I guess he does have a good point, is that not everyone would. So.
So a bunch of mouth breathers don't know how Shelley came up with the story. And now we got to deal with this movie.
Baby, not everyone has degrees in English.
And not everybody saw that movie Lost Weekend. Or Lost
or
Summer.
Gothic.
Whatever movie. What was that movie called? The one with Bill from Bill and Ted and some other... I don't remember what the name of the fucking movie was. But it was a movie from the late 80s, early 90s about that time period when Shelley wrote Frankenstein, and it was on. There was a preview for it on the VHS of High Spirits. I just remember that. I can't think of the title of the movie though. It's not on DVD. I know that.
Winter.
There was Gothic, the Ken Russell movie too.
No, it wasn't Gothic.
But that's what that film is.
Really?
Well.
I thought Gothic was about like a troll or something, because there was that weird goblin guy on the cover.
Yeah. No. That's a I was about to say hallucination. That was a hallucination fueled by all the absinthe that, you know, Shelley and
Byron
and yeah, that whole gang, you know. But it's a really good movie.
Oh.
I like Ken Russell anyway, but yeah, so there are at least two films about how this movie is bullshit.
You tell it. Okay, well, speaking of literary characters, here we go again. Hansel and Gretel Witch Hunters, sort of literary characters, skewer box office competition. January eyed as prime real estate for horror. Another January weekend and another horror project hitting the top of the box office. This weekend, it was Hansel and Gretel Witch Hunters, Tommy Wirkola's horror actioner starring Jeremy Renner and Gemma Arterton. The film grossed an estimated $19 million, not quite hitting the projected numbers on Friday. Some said it would hit $25 million. Still not shabby for a film that is at 15% fresh on Rotten Tomatoes.
Who gives a fuck what Rotten Tomatoes says?
Mama came in at number two with an estimated $12.8 million, bringing that film's total to $48.6 million. Not too shabby.
That movie's got some legs.
Yeah. It appears January has become the go-to spot for horror releases. Last year, The Devil Inside grossed big bucks. 2013 has started strong with Texas Chainsaw 3D, Mama, and Hansel and Gretel Witch Hunters all opening at number one. Will this weekend's release, Warm Bodies, keep up the genre winning streak?
God, I hope not.
Who knows? Next year, Lionsgate has already marked its territory, claiming a January 20th, 2014 date for Ghosts.
You know why the horror movie is doing well in January? Because nothing fucking comes out in January.
Yeah, there's no competition.
That's it. It's not that these movies are particularly good, it's just that they're making a shitload of money because there's nothing to go see in January.
Right. It was a soft weekend overall. Like, if Iron Man 3 had come out opposite... You know,
anything.
Hansel and Gretel.
I mean,
then it would have buried it.
Right, like The Devil Inside made a shitload of money, and that movie's terrible. Texas Chainsaw 3D made a shitload of money. It's not particularly very good.
Opening weekend really doesn't mean anything. What you have to pay attention. What you have to pay attention to is the drop off. You know,
right.
I mean, is it holding steady, or is it starting? Does it drop off immediately after the first weekend? Because then
word of mouth,
people have been talking shit about it. You know,
also international.
I forgot to tell you, that was the last story.
Oh.
I'm so sorry.
No problem.
Well, I'm not prepared for that now.
Well,
I know. I'm so sorry.
Tell me something else.
The name of that movie I was thinking of. It's called Haunted Summer from
1988. Oh, nice.
And the plot synopsis is, in 1815, authors Lord Byron, Mary Shelley, and Percy Shelley get together for some philosophical discussions, but the situation soon deteriorates into mind games, drugs, and sex.
Hot damn.
And it has Philip Anglim.
They get together for some, what is it they were doing? Philosophical discussion.
Sex and drugs. Eric Stoltz is apparently in it.
And then you say Alex Winter was in it too?
Yeah, he plays John William Polidori. Then Philip Anglim is Lord Byron. Alice Krieg is Mary Shelley. And Eric Stoltz is Percy Shelley.
Interesting.
Yeah. And as far as I know, not on DVD, because I did look it up before. Because I actually ended up watching, I watched High Spirits on VHS at my friend's house, because he didn't have it on DVD. And I saw the trailer, I was like, oh my god, I remember this trailer! And I looked for it on DVD, not available, pissed me off.
Somebody should write a letter.
I don't care that much.
Then we should probably just leave it there.
Yes.
I guess so.
I guess we should get on with it.
For the news, and we're out!
Alright, we'll be right back with the Theater Bazaar.
Hey kids, do you like horror movies?
Do you like podcasts?
Do you like people called Gil and Roscoe?
If you do, you're going to love
Gil and Roscoe's Bodacious Horror Podcast! Every week, you'll join your hosts, Gil and Roscoe, who'll discuss a range of topics, including juice drinks,
alcoholic drinks,
lollipops,
bobby socks,
Robocop,
uncomfortable chairs,
comfortable chairs.
It sounds absolutely nothing like our podcast.
Well, it should be a representation of our podcast, so we should start off with the pure cheesy intro and then just be like, actually, no, that's only way too upbeat for us.
Yeah. We could have some dead classy music in the background and people would think we're really high class gentlemen.
We are high class gentlemen. That's just not what our podcast sounds like.
Right.
So that's Gil and Roscoe's Bodacious Horror Podcast. Look for us on iTunes, Facebook, and Twitter.
It came from the instant queue.
What a story. Not every poem is a creation of the mind.
Go our separate ways before we hurt each other more than we already have.
Do you think you can hurt me more than you already have?
Oh! Don't forget to feed it.
Is that man ever going to wake up again?
I feel everything they did. You need to get away from me.
The Theater Bazaar was released in 2011, and synopsis is, the film contains six stories, each inspired by Paris' legendary Grand Guignol Theater. Six stories are presented within a connecting framework, the Theater Guignol. Enola Penny is intrigued by an abandoned theater in her neighborhood. One night, the theater door mysteriously opens as she enters. A puppet host, or Guignol, introduces six short films. Mother of Toads, I Love You, Wet Dreams, The Accident, Vision Stains, and Sweets. As each is shown, the host becomes more human, and Enola becomes more puppet-like. And these were all there's various directors for these. So Douglas Buck directed the Accident. Buddy Giovinazzo directed I Love You. David Gregory directed Sweets. Kareem Hussein directed Vision Stains. Jeremy Kasdan directed the framing segments. Tom Savini directed Wet Dreams. Richard Stanley directed The Mother of Toads. And these were written by Zach Chasler, Richard Stanley, Scarlett Amaris, Emiliano Renzani, Buddy Giovizzano, John Apisto, Douglas Buck, Kareem Hussein, and David Gregory. Udo Kier is Peg Poet. Virginia Newcomb is Enola Penny. And then they've got everybody who was in the other stuff. So anyway, because this is an anthology, I guess we'll just sort of run through each story kind of briefly, I guess.
I think that's best.
Okay. Who wants to start off with the Theater Bazaar?
I'll tackle this one. The wraparound is basically a punchline with no setup.
Yeah.
There's no reason to care about this girl who wanders into the theater.
I totally agree.
You'll get your turn.
I agreed with you, Dick.
Oh, I mean, thanks. I thought Mother of Toads was a good way to start it off. I thought that was pretty cool. Not great, but it was all right. And then it kind of goes downhill from there. You know, I thought The Accident was pretty compelling.
Beautiful.
Yeah, I mean, that was probably my favorite. This was actually the second time I've seen this. And yeah, I watched it a while back, and then it had been long enough that I felt like I needed to refresh myself. And The Accident really stuck out to me as like that's a really dark, beautiful short film, you know, about the notion of death and whatnot. I thought that was really intriguing. I'm kind of okay with Vision Stains. I don't know that it's terribly well executed, but I love the concept of it. And the other stuff I felt was pretty disposable. I thought Swedes was not very engaging. And I Love You was kind of boring, really. And even the Wet Dreams one, aside from the final scene in the attic when everything sort of comes to its head, I thought that worked pretty well, mostly because of is it Debbie Rochon who's in that?
Yeah. Yeah,
with Tom Savini, yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, I thought her performance was actually really good in that. Not so much the lead of the film though, or of the short.
Right.
So yeah, I mean, all anthology movies, as we've discussed in the past, have their ups and downs. I thought this was more down than up. Although the ones that I enjoyed pretty well. You know, I thought those three in particular, The Accident, Vision Stains, and The Mother of Toads, like if there had been three other stories that were as good or better than those, I would have liked this anthology. But the fact that the other shorts in Theater Bazaar are kind of down, and the wraparound, like, I get it, but I also don't really care for Udo Kier's performance in this very much. So as a whole, I think it's a disappointing anthology. There are far, far better anthologies out there. And especially if you're watching something on Netflix, VHS is a far superior anthology film.
Ooh, I wouldn't go there, but, you know, that's just me.
You'll get your turn.
So yeah, Will, right now. So go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead. No.
No, I'm sorry.
Take it away.
Finish.
Listen to me, I'm Jamie, I got something to say.
Finish, Beau, I'm sorry.
No, that's pretty much it.
Oh, you know, you're just being an ass. I apologize. Okay, I agree with everything that you said, especially with The Accident. The first thing out of my mouth when that segment ended was, that was beautiful. Because I really felt connected to that. I love the fact that the mother in that segment was so honest with her child. And I think that's really the way you need to be, you know. And so I was loving that. the whole thing in general was just beautiful. It was shot beautifully, so it looked great. And just the story overall was definitely easily my favorite. And the other one, what was the other one that you said, or the second one that you mentioned?
Vision Stains.
Oh, yeah, Vision Stains. I really liked that one as well. There were a couple of issues I had with it, but I dig the concept, and I really liked the effects in that movie, like with the eyeball effects. I thought that was really, really well done. And I know that because I had to watch through my fingers, you know, because it was a little bit too realistic for me. But it was, you know, it was definitely a cool concept and really original. For the most part, though, I feel like the other four were just there. Like, I really just was not that sucked into them. I felt like I Love You was, I mean, okay, that one was one where when it got to the end of the segment, I was going, please don't end the way I think you're going to end. And then it ended the way I thought it was going to end. And I was like, damn it, you know, because I really thought that when that one was going, I thought, well, this could go somewhere. This could be really good, you know, and it just really wasn't. And the wraparound, you know, it just seemed, I pretty much checked out during the wraparound. Like, that was my time to check my drink and make sure I didn't need any more or whatever. Like, because it just, I didn't feel like there was really anything going on. Mm-hmm. I didn't care what happened to her. I didn't even really know anything about her because I wasn't invested. And it kind of reminded me of the Richard Gere ventriloquist dummy scene from Chicago. I don't know why, but anyway, so overall, this is one of the weaker anthologies, I think, but I think there are a couple that are, you know, really worth it. However, I don't know if that justifies me recommending the whole thing, you know, just because I really don't feel like it overall, it was that compelling. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. Like, I mean, like Bo said, the ones I liked, I really liked. Like, I really liked The Accident a lot. But, yeah.
And the good thing about this being sort of at people's fingertips who have the Netflix Instant Watch, I wouldn't recommend that somebody rush out and rent it or buy it or anything. But if it's available, like, watch, you know, at least two of the stories, maybe three, that we've discussed that we're saying, hey, these are good, and you don't really have to worry about the other stuff. You can fast forward through all that shit.
I agree.
All right, I hated Mother of Toads. That was boring as shit. I almost turned it off during Mother of Toads. It was so fucking boring.
Which one was that? Like,
the very first story.
Yeah, and I'm a sucker for anything that name checks Lovecraft to an extent. And it's not great, but it does have that kind of Lovecraftian air about it, even if it doesn't really go anywhere with it.
Well, that's so kind of why I didn't like it, because it's like, oh, this sure could be kind of interesting at all. I Love You, it was okay. I thought it could have been more interesting. I thought it could have gone someplace different by the end.
Right.
And it didn't, and that was kind of dumb. Wet Dreams, meh. It was cool to see Tom Savini. You know, Savini's always fun. He had some funny lines, but otherwise, meh.
Yeah. I like Debbie Rochon.
Yeah, she was fine.
In that, I always love Debbie, though. Debbie's great. And, oh, I forgot to mention Sweets. That one I was kind of disappointed in. I mean, I really felt like it went for the obvious. Like, there was nothing really great about it. However, and I was disappointed about that because Jeff Dylan Graham, who was in that segment, I really like, but he didn't get to say much anyway, so it didn't matter. I mean, he was one of the party guests. Mm-hmm. And
actually, I think the performances in Sweets, like across the board, are good. With the exception of the I keep thinking of her as the what was her name from Brazil and Who's the Boss?
Catherine Hellman.
Catherine Hellman, that kind of character. I didn't think that actress was all that great, but I thought the performances were good. I just wish something had happened in that story.
Yeah, I am right there.
Yeah.
Right. It was a little on the nose. And did you notice the Last Supper nod at the end of
that? Of course, yeah.
It was just, wow.
Yeah, the accident. I know you guys both really liked The Accident. kind of after being underwhelmed by the first three stories, the accident just sort of passed me by, and I was just like, all right, that was something. It was pretty to look at, but I was sort of just coasting at that point. Vision Stains was the only one that I really thought was like, oh, this is kind of an interesting story. You know, I like the concept of it. The execution was pretty good. You know, it had a pretty good look and a kind of an interesting little wrap up that I liked. The interstitial stuff was really kind of just distracting, and that kind of broke up the vibe of the movie. And then, when it gets to the end with the wrap up, it's just like, well, that was a waste of time.
Right. We all saw that coming from miles away. There are previously undiscovered tribes in the Amazon
who knew
how the wrap up was going
right.
to. Yeah.
And Sweets was, I thought was going to be interesting. It was very pretty to look at, but fuck, was it boring and just obvious. Like, really, once it gets to the
so obvious.
When it got to the end, I was like, really? Did you really have to go there?
Yeah, I was really hoping they would pull something out to surprise me at the end, you know?
But they didn't. So.
Sorry. But they didn't.
We all know.
So this was just, I mean, like I said, the Vision Stains was really the only one I thought was really good, you know? I mean, Udo Kier was, he was Udo Kier. He was basically cashing a check here. He wasn't doing a whole lot of acting because there wasn't a whole lot for him to do. The actors for most of these were good, but the stories just didn't grab me. And I think that the sort of the Netflix description of this, of these being like six sexual horror stories, is really wrong.
Yeah.
I was like, totally. There's not a whole lot of sex in any of these except for like the first two.
Yeah, and although there is the simmering passion between mother and daughter in the accident, which I felt at times was inappropriate, but you know, I to me, that's the real standout of this. Like, if that movie were presented to you as a short film without the greater context of the theater bazaar, I think it's very compelling.
I might have enjoyed it better if I'd seen it just by itself.
Yeah. Yeah,
yeah, I don't feel like it fit with the rest of the stories here.
I think that's what threw me, because I was like, Mother of Toads was kind of meh. I Love You was kind of meh. Wet Dreams was kind of meh, but they all kind of fit together. And then all of a sudden we have the accident where this woman is talking to her child, and I'm like, what? Why
are we
suddenly getting a philosophy lesson in this movie about stupid horror movies? What?
Yeah, it was a little too elevated for the rest of the.
Oh, absolutely.
I think, but you know, good stuff. That was such good stuff. I really enjoyed that.
Mm-hmm. Fair enough. All right. So, what are your ratings for this mess? This hot mess.
I give this hot steaming mess 2 stars.
Okay.
Because I think there are a couple of stories worth looking at, and like I said, on Watch Instantly, very easy to find those. Mm. Just shoot me an email or something. I'll tell you guys which ones you need to watch.
2.5 from me.
Okay.
Not really any explanation, just that's what it is.
Okay. I think I'd give it a 2. Like I said, I didn't hate it, but it just wasn't, I was sort of overwhelmed with meh at the end of it. I'd say it was very pretty to look at, some of the acting was good, but overall the stories just weren't that compelling.
Definitely.
Yeah.
So
let's get to the real shit. Let's do this.
All right. Well, then we'll be right back with the
Night of the Creeps.
Thank you, Night of the Creeps.
Good evening, folks. Do you enjoy action and adventure, romance and comedy? How about long strolls on the beach and a fine champagne by moonlight? Do you like pina coladas and getting caught in the rain? Or would you rather listen to some in-depth conversation about film where many timely and poignant observations and witticisms are made? Mo here from the Drunk on VHS podcast. And if you like any of those things, then I have some bad news for you. Drunk on VHS has none of these. But you should listen anyway, because I asked him nicely and said, please, await. Please tune in every Wednesday for new episodes exclusively at
CouchGamer.com.
Bring the family. Bring your friends.
Coming soon. We'll be right back.
but something awful's gonna happen. There's big trouble coming. It's J.D.'s revenge.
The gin cleanses your soul out.
Listen, man, ain't nothing wrong with my soul.
There was a real mean killing, and the wrong guy died. They buried his body, but his soul survived for J.D.'s revenge.
Lately, I've been getting these headaches, you know? I've never felt this lost before in my life.
You beat me up.
Ike, you,
I don't remember doing any of those things. Maybe something is happening to me.
The reincarnation of a killer who came back from the dead to possess a man's soul, make love to his woman, and get the vengeance he craves.
I'm flipping out.
He's my baby sister, Betty Jo. You my baby sister, Betty Jo. They are my enemies.
They my enemies.
That's one weird nigga.
Arlene, I'm cracking up, man. I blacked out.
Glenn Turman, the star of Cooley High.
What in the world have you done to yourself?
I ain't seen a get-up like that in 25 years.
Yeah.
Joan Pringle.
Well, my business is where? Theotis.
Lou Gossett.
There is no danger, Theotis.
This nigga's crazy.
I'm the craziest nigga you ever gonna meet.
Yay!
He wasn't himself.
Don't nobody talk to me like that.
He turned into this monster, a whole other person.
Scared of your dad.
There is something wrong with Ike. Tonight he kept saying he was this J.D. Walker.
J.D. Walker's been dead for over 30 years.
It's J.D. Walker. What the hell do you mean J.D. Walker is back? This boy is possessed by the spirit of J.D. Walker.
Are you a jackleg preacher now, Elijah?
What's J.D.'s voice?
Where's that good for nothing brother of yours?
And his manner?
I got scored to settle with him.
You were possessed.
Notice killed Betty Joe.
40 years later, on someone else's face, you can see J.D. Walker's hatred time just won't erase. J.D.'s revenge.
I'll have my revenge.
You shall pay, Black Prince. I bless you with my name. You shall be Blackula.
Blackula, the Black Avenger, rising from his tomb to fill the night with horror. Blackula, Dracula's soul brother, deadlier even than he.
You know, he is a strange dude.
You're a nut that ran in front of my cab. You're the only imbecile on this street. Boy.
Blackula.
Look at man, you found on me. He got to be around here somewhere. I mean, now listen, you take your hands off of me. I don't know you.
He thirsts for your blood. He hungers for your soul. Warm young bodies will feed his hunger. Hot, fresh blood will quench his awful thirst.
Thank you. Bloody Mary. Are you, into the occult?
No!
How about the, heavy stuff?
What do you think of vampires?
Vampires? I think they're possibly the most fascinating of all.
More horrifying than Dracula. Black Avenger, Blackula, from American International Pictures.
And now our feature presentation.
The night of the formal is finally here for Chris, Cindy, and JC. It's going to be the best night of their lives. But tonight is also the night of the creeps. From a world unknown comes a nightmare unimagined. First, they are under you, around you, on you, and then inside you.
They get in through your mouth and you walk around while they incubate, even if you're dead.
They are a new breed of terror.
Wait!
They are a different kind of horror.
Zombies, exploding heads, creepy crawlies. We could have a little problem.
The creeps are taking over.
Oh, I gotta
got good news and bad news, girls.
What?
The good news is your dates are here.
What's the bad news?
They're dead.
You have never had a night like this. Night of the Creeps. If you scream, you're dead.
Night of the Creeps was released in 1986, and the synopsis is alien brain parasites entering humans through the mouth turn their hosts into killing zombies. Some teenagers start to fight against them. That is the worst synopsis I've ever found. Holy shit.
Yeah, but how do you... Like, the real synopsis of this movie is, holy shit, you've got to watch this.
Pretty much. This was written and directed by Fred Decker, and stars Jason Lively as Chris, Steve Marshall as JC, Jill Whitlow as Cynthia, Tom fucking Atkins as Ray Cameron, Robert Kerman from Cannibal Holocaust as the patrolman with the searchlight, and Dick Miller, who I believe was...
Dick Miller.
Was he? Did he play Jason, or did he play Michael Myers at some point?
Dick Miller?
Yeah.
No. He's just kind of eponymous. He's been in all the Corman movies. He played the original.
Okay.
Yeah. And Gremlins. And yeah. That guy's been around.
Oh, I'm thinking of Dick Warlock. Okay.
Dick Warlock. That's my name in college.
Anyway, Dick Miller is Walt. So we're not going to put a spoiler warning on this movie because it's pretty straightforward. There's nothing to really spoil. You know where it's going as soon as it starts. So yeah, who wants to tee off on Night of the Creeps?
Go ahead, Bo. I know you're itching.
All right, let's do this. First of all, I don't think you know where this movie is going as soon as it starts, because it starts on a fucking alien spaceship for no good reason.
Okay, there's that.
That's an alternate
beginning from the original. I think that was not the theatrical beginning, was it?
I think I think it's the ending that's different.
Oh, just kidding.
So that's awesome, because we have a slug-infested alien shooting a pod to Earth. Then we start in the 50s, where we get to do a fun slasher movie. Then we come forward in time, where we have this frat party movie with actually likable characters, mm-hmm. believe it or not. I think JC is one of the great horror movie sacrifices.
Yeah.
The moment where...
Is that why they called him JC?
It's gotta be. And he died for our sins. But the moment where the tape is played, mm-hmm. Which we'll talk about that in a minute, but that is so good. So not only do you have that stuff, then you have Tom freaking Atkins in maybe his best performance.
Which, I noticed this while watching the movie. He's basically playing the exact same cop character from Monster Squad. He actually has a line that was later used in Monster Squad about the mummy, when he says, a 20-year-old dead guy doesn't get up and walk away?
Yeah.
Yeah, I was like, wait, you used that in Monster Squad a year later. Way to go, Fred Decker.
Right. Why not? The line works.
Did you see, the part in the bathroom? There's all the, I'm sure, Bo, you've noticed it before, where like
Paul,
there's
rules.
One where it says Striper rules, but then as he's falling out of the stall across the room on the wall, it says Go Monster Squad.
Oh yeah.
Screaming like banshees.
Screaming like banshee.
Yeah, I think, so Tom Atkins plays a suicidal cop with the past, or his past is that his girlfriend was slaughtered by this axe murderer, and, not his girlfriend, he was still in love with her, and now he's doing everything he can to kill himself, and yet is thrust into the role of hero. I think the lead in it, Christine, Cynthia. Cynthia Cronenberg, right?
Yes.
So I think she's cute as a button. The people that you're supposed to hate are completely hateful.
Like the Bradster. Brad
is the Bradster is hilarious. And it has a great ending. Mm-hmm.
Bubba from Mama's Family, by the way.
Yeah, I just think that everything about this movie just works. And maybe it's because I saw it at a time when I was, a younger kid who loved horror movies already. And this movie, which we discussed this a little bit last night, but this movie kind of celebrates the genre. It name checks all these horror directors weren't exactly household names in some cases.
In 1986, at least.
Sure. And, you know, it has Dick Miller and Tom Atkins, again, in maybe the best performance he's ever done.
And there's a ton of people in this movie where I was like, oh, I know them. I've seen them in other things. And I just can't place who they are.
Euro Rusty. Yeah.
Yep. Yep. And I think he's just fine in this. Yeah. When you get to the resolution of this film, there is nothing that isn't just badass about it. Euro Rusty is great. Tom Atkins is great. The effects are great. I love this movie. It is.
The evil dog puppet is probably the funniest thing ever.
You know, okay. Well, and therein lies the difference in the endings. Mm-hmm. Because the original ending doesn't come with zombie dog.
Right.
And we'll get into the ending, I'm sure, later. But my overall impression of this movie is that it is a great big hug to horror fans because it doesn't skimp on the gore or being kind of scary and creepy at times. Mm-hmm. But it also loves what it is. It embraces what it is. And just it's a big puppy of a movie. It just wants you to love it. And I can't help but do just that. I love this movie.
Yeah, I am always willing to watch this. And if someone hasn't seen it, I'm like, oh, please, let's watch it. Yeah. And it's just timeless. I never get tired of this. I love Tom freaking Atkins so much. And I agree. This is definitely, if not his best, it's right up there. It's such a fun character, and he fits it so well. I mean, you would believe that was really him, you know. And yeah, they don't skimp. And I'm like, even the axe murder scene was pretty cool. I mean, it's not over the top, but you know, I think it's enough to satisfy you. And everyone, all the likable ones were likable. You know, they were. It was like Revenge of the Nerds and Slither and, well, I mean, it wasn't like Slither was like it, but, you know, I don't know. I mean, it's just fun, and you want the good guys to win, and you hate the bad guys, and, you know, you got this adorable cripple.
Yeah, and it's funny,
but he's a hero, you know, and I like that. Mm-hmm.
You know, and I'm sorry. Now I know. Stepping all over you, but the relationship between JC and Euro Rusty. What is his name in the movie? Now that Jamie's
can't
Euro
remember. I called him Euro Rusty the whole time I was watching the movie. So you know.
So the relationship between Chris and JC seems so genuine that these are real friends. It's not just that super bad style of friend of, you know, we're all equally vulgar and therefore we hang out together.
Right.
Uh-huh. It's like if McLovin really loved the friends he was hanging out with, and you get that from JC, who is this character that would do anything for his friend and says so. And, well, and I don't know how you don't love that character.
No, one thing I really find refreshing about his character is he doesn't do that awful cliche thing where when your best friend hooks up with someone, you get all jealous and pissy because they're going to be spending time with them now. Rather, what he does is engineers for them to spend more time together. Mm-hmm. You know, but Euro Rusty and the girl of his dreams, JC, makes it happen. And as he's walking away to himself, you know, he's just like, you know, go get it. You know, like he wants what his friend wants for his friend. And that is just... he's an incredible character. I love him. And he's adorable.
Yeah. And when he talks about, you know, how like, look, I know because of who I am and what I'm like, I know I'm not ever going to get the girl, but you can. And I love you enough to want you to have that. You know, that's the moment where, you know, my old soiled heart just melts. And I'm just like, JC, you are so lovable. I hope you live. Oh, shit. But even his death, like I said, the tape that is played where he finally says, you know, I was walking without the crutches.
Mm-hmm. My God.
And it's so heartbreaking. Oh, shit.
Every time. You know, and then when he tells him he loves him, and I'm just like, oh, my God, you're killing me.
I know. It's... And
looks at me and goes, "Translate that itchy, itchy." Like from Return. I mean, fucking, what is it? Evil Dead. No, what is it? Resident Evil. Thank you. They come across the letter in Resident Evil 2, I think, soldier was like, itchy, itchy, you know, and he was changing.
Yeah.
Anyway, I was sorry.
Yeah. But
little side note.
All the stuff with JC is fantastic, but even after he dies, once it comes to the head of we're going to go into the sorority house and, you know, clean shit up. Like, that whole scene is amazing. I love the swing shot of Tom Atkins firing the gun. Mm-hmm. Oh, man, this movie just fucking works. Everywhere it turns, it does it right.
Well, with Cynthia and Euro Rusty with the flamethrower and the shotgun, I love that scene, too. I mean, it's just, it's awesome. Everyone is badass.
It has great dialogue. I mean, the Tom Atkins has the great line of... Well, your dates are here. The bad news is they're dead. And, of course, Thrill Me. And, what was the other one? There's a really good one. Oh, of course, the old Asian janitor. Scream like a banshee. Just, it's so...
Actually,
so good.
The line that I love most from this movie is when Chris shows up at is it Detective Cameron?
Yeah.
Yes. When he shows up at Detective Cameron's pad and he's like, hey, there's something going on. And it's when Tom Atkins is spilling the beans on the fact that he tracked down and killed the axe murderer, mm-hmm. and is telling this story and pauses to say, like, you know what happened next, Spanky? And his response is, are you sure you should be telling me this? And Tom Atkins says, wrong. And like, just oblivious. He's just unloading at this point, and it is such a beautiful moment. It makes me laugh so much, but it also tells you everything you need to know about that character, which is he has been haunted all these years and now it finds that, you know, this phantom that's been haunting him come back. Mm-hmm. And it's so beautifully constructed. God damn, Fred Dekker just nailed it on this movie.
Also, probably one of the sadder lines in the movie is when Chris shows up at Tom Atkins' house again towards the end, and he's like, what are you doing here? He's like, they got alfalfa.
Yeah.
It's just like, oh.
Yeah.
And that's when Tom Atkins is like, all right, time to go to work.
I need a standard issue
flamethrower. Oh, you got a requisition sheet for it? Well, you see, the thing about that is I don't have a sheet. And he just, you know, basically threatens to shoot the guy.
The other kind of genius thing about when Chris shows up to recruit him, mm-hmm. is after killing, again, this axe murderer, he has duct taped his door, turned on the gas.
Oh, yeah.
He's going to die.
Yeah, mm-hmm. He's done. He's George. He's W'd his door. And he's like, nobody, he's checked out. But when he says, the moment he says they got alfalfa, it just completely wakes him up again. And he's like, these fuckers are going down. Mm-hmm. And that's some badass shit.
Yep.
Yeah. I love the effects, too, of all the slugs in the basement.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
and,
yeah.
And with the one that flies towards me grabs it like, no.
Yeah. Okay, so there's two endings to this movie. There's the one that I saw where Cynthia and Chris get out of the burning sorority house after Cameron blows it up. And the dog who was infected earlier, who infected the Bradster, who is the funniest looking fucking puppet when they do close-ups of it. It's just, it's so wonderfully bad. It shoots a worm at Cynthia, and then we fade to black. Is mm-hmm. that
right.
Ending. Bo, what's the other ending?
The other ending is while emergency services are rallying to the sorority house after the explosion, you see Tom freaking Atkins all zombied out, strolling down the street, burned and singed and all fucked up, and he makes it to a cemetery, and I think he collapses, if memory serves, collapses, and then you see lights shining down on the cemetery as if the UFOs have come back and are looking for this lost package. Mm-hmm. So it's radically different, but it does put a nice, you know, bow on the movie, because you kind of frame it with, oh, well, the aliens are, you know, they're still looking for this shit that got dumped.
Right.
And but in the meantime, they're going to have to deal with all of these, you know, zombies that are soon to be resurrected because of the slugs and Tom freaking Atkins's zombified gestated brain slugs.
Right.
Yeah. While I was watching it this time, the only thing I could think of was the mayor from Slither when he's like, what kind of thing wants you to eat it?
Yeah.
And it just cracks me up.
Yeah. And Slither very clearly borrowed from this film.
Borrowed? I don't mind it. I love sure. Slither.
And this is a movie I hope no one ever remakes it. I hope that whoever has the rights to it just sits on it forever. This is a movie that needs to be discovered, not rebooted.
Mm-hmm. I agree. And Fred Dekker, just in general, I would just like to make a comment about how much of a horror fan he obviously is, just based on his work, and how much appreciation he obviously has for other horror fans, because I feel like he makes movies with fans in mind.
You know, it's actually kind of strange. He's only done a couple of movies. He did this and Monster Squad and RoboCop 3. And then I think he did maybe he directed some episodes of a TV series, and that was it.
And, you know, for his such a limited body of work, at least two of them are, you know, well, I don't know to everyone, but to me, they're pretty iconic.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Apparently he also wrote for Enterprise, but, you know, can't hold that against him.
Yeah, I mean, no matter what this guy ever does or doesn't do in the future, Night of the Creeps sells it for me. I mean, that is the work of a supremely talented guy, and just got it right, man. I mean, it's lightning in a bottle. There's so many things that can go wrong making a movie, and this is a situation where the movie comes out just right. I have little problems with it, little problems with performances in places, or maybe the set design at times and stuff like that, but they're so minor compared to the achievement of this movie that I feel bad pointing them out almost, because I don't want anyone to have an excuse not to see it.
Right. There is one thing that has always bothered me about this movie, and it's extremely minor. But it just always sticks in my craw. And that's when they first come across the body in cryogenics. Yeah, the cryogenically
right.
preserved body. And then I think it was JC, immediately makes a joke about Walt Disney, you know, is funny. Well, then, like, 5 minutes later, Euro Rusty is explaining to JC what cryogenics is. Like, they're reading the thing as if they don't know what it is. And I'm like, but you have to know what it is, because you just made that Walt Disney joke, you know, which was great. But then I felt like, and that, I don't know, that always bothered me. But like I said, it's really minor. I'm over it. But
right.
I'm over it as soon as it happens. But
within the same scene, you get the, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. Do you think it's taking the Lord's name in vain if you say, oh my God, like
oh
that?
Oh my God.
Yeah. God, the movie is so good.
Okay, so.
Why was it every movie this good?
Ratings.
Oh, well, this is a buy. I mean, this is a no question.
Rating
any
now.
Any horror fan who doesn't want this movie in their library, I don't even get. I don't understand it.
Because they are wrong.
Well, I will use the appropriate grading scale.
Oh, A plus.
Oh, damn.
Well, yeah. This is one of those few movies I can watch at any time. It always entertains me, and I admire it greatly. There are people I can kind of see, someone who did not grow up in that era of horror films who might find the effects a little lacking and whatnot, but it's an A-plus movie, man. This is why you go to see horror films.
And you?
I'm going to give it an A.
All right.
A solid A, because it is awesome.
A for awesome.
Yep. So, that is it for Night of the Creeps, and we'll be right back to close out the show.
First, he conquered YouTube. Then, he was on Cadaver Lab. Next came Cinema Corpse. And then, he was on your mom.
What? It totally happened.
Kruger Nation Horror Podcast. www.krugernation.com.
So, that is it for episode 51 of the podcast. Thank you so much for listening.
Bye.
Next week, we'll be starting our Blaxploitation series with Blackula for our feature, for Al and JD's Revenge as our instant cue selection. And next week is also the one-year anniversary of Devour the Podcast, so we will have a top 10 and bottom 10 films that have been reviewed on the show. So our 10 favorites and our 10 not-so-favorites.
You know, as much as I'm looking forward to the 10 favorites, mm-hmm. the 10 bottom favorites, we should just call fuck these movies.
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah. Are there 10 of them?
I'm sure there are. We've done a shitload of movies.
It's true.
But it's also a weird kind of grading with a curve situation, because there are much worse movies out there than the ones that we're going to be placing in the bottom 10. Mm-hmm. And yet, we've got to pick 10.
Oh, I can tell you there are I can think of at least 5 movies that I saw for this show that were fucking terrible.
No one talked about. Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, honestly, we really watched a lot of fucking movies for this show. It's kind of obscene.
You're obscene.
Your face is obscene.
But
juvenility makes me smile.
What?
I said his juvenility makes me smile. And yes, I just made that up. I can spell it and I can say it, so it's a word.
Oh, shit.
Can't argue with her math.
Oh, lordy.
A year later, and it's just as silly as it was.
Pretty much, yeah. In the beginning. Actually, the show has gotten progressively sillier.
That's Bo's fault.
Yeah, pretty much. Well, it's your fault, too.
No!
Both of you have made the show silly.
I am totally serious all the time.
You can't see the face I'm making, but it is similar to Ross's dismay face.
Do you mean General Ross from the Hulk comics?
No. Ross from Gil and Fresco.
It means Ross Perot.
Oh!
You know, the Star...
I would like to point out also, for the record... which I'm sure is being kept, that at no point have I made fun of Gil and Roscoe during this episode.
Oh, it's true, you haven't yet.
Right. No, I think those are two of the funniest fuzzy little foreigners out there.
They're adorable. I love them all.
Yes.
I was telling David this, and I a quick plug for their show yet again, because I do love it oh so much. But when they were talking about Repo, the Genetic Opera, and I believe it was Gil who said, that movie has broken you down so much that by the time you get to Paris Hilton, you think she gives an okay performance. Made me laugh so hard, I had to pause the podcast before continuing further. That was hilarious.
Yeah,
so,
I love this guy.
Yeah. So.
Yes, indeed.
Just to put any controversy to rest, I do not think they speak like stroke victims. I can understand those people far more.
Yes, episode 21 of Gil and Roscoe was hilarious and awesome. And the end of episode 20, Roscoe tries to sing our theme song, but doesn't know the words, which is pretty hilarious.
Oh. And I would like to make a request. I mean, one of them, please, please, please talk about how you crave KFC fortnightly.
Why?
Because
yeah. I get it. I don't even think you should explain it.
Okay. Look it up.
smart ass.
He... Oh, sorry. I love when you do that. Oh, someone
said... Oh, are we protecting the innocent?
No, I don't remember if it was an email, if it was a post somewhere where someone said that their girlfriend accuses them of laughing like Muttley all the time.
Oh, I think that was somebody on the Facebook group.
Okay.
Mentioned that.
Oh, yes, you're right. And that cracked me up because, yeah.
I think we all do that. I'm notorious for the Muttley laugh, especially on this show.
Yeah, too, when I'm laughing really hard and I'm just like... Either that or passing out and falling into a mirror and then peeing myself. That happens too.
That's a very specific set of circumstances.
It
you
is.
Would think so, but her mirror budget is astronomical.
No, seriously. Have I not told you that story?
No, please.
It's a fun fact. Okay.
Gather around, children. It's fun fact time.
Yeah, she has like 7,000 years bad luck.
I had just moved in to this new place, my roommate Jen and I, and we had two dogs at the time, two lab mixes. Hers was a yellow one, Bailey, and mine was Sammy, who was black. But Bailey, the Halloween before, a friend of ours had come as IR Baboon, and so he had this like afro wig, and we put it on Bailey and took a picture because it was funny. Well, as we're moving in, I find this picture of Bailey and I just start laughing, like hysterically laughing. And I'm in the hall and I'm showing it to Jen and there's a full length mirror leaning against the wall. Well, and I'm laughing so hard that I can't breathe. And I'm just, it's like, just laugh, laugh, laugh. Even though I can't breathe, I'm still laughing. Mm-hmm. And then the next thing I know, I'm waking up face down on the floor. And Jennifer is picking glass out of my back, and I've peed myself. And I just laid there, and the first thing that crossed my mind was, oh, my God, I am so drunk. And then I was like, wait, I'm not drunk.
And that was the first time.
Yeah, that. Well, it actually gets better, because then she's like, why don't you go take a shower? You know, because my back was bloody and stuff, and I peed myself. So like, I went to go take a shower, and while I was doing that, she finished cleaning up the glass. I was not aware that she put the glass in the bathroom wastebasket. So when I went to take the trash out later that week, I pulled the bag from the bathroom wastebasket, took it into the kitchen, put it down into the kitchen bag, and went to smush it, and a shard of glass went through the center of my palm. Like straight through my hand. Yeah. So that fucking mirror got me twice. But anyway, yeah.
On the upside, it let you call out of work for stigmata.
And how often do you get to do that?
This is true.
Like once a month.
Sadly.
My stigmata is acting up, y'all. Can't come in today. I'm bleeding all over the place. God for your sins. Love you.
Oh, Lord.
I'll save it in a chalice and pass it around. All right, are we done?
We're done. Before we get any more sacrilegious.
Okay. I like to think of it as sacrilegious.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Bo, I love your comment, too, where you were to Jesse when you were like, I was raised Catholic, sir. Your guilt is nothing to me. Or your guilt has no effect on me.
You cannot penetrate my self-hatred.
Have you ever dated a Jewish girl?
I dated a Jewish guy.
Mm.
I have a thing for Jewish guys. I don't know why.
Staying out of this.
Oh, I'm just saying, Jewish guilt, that'll test your limits. Even if you were raised Catholic, Jewish guilt is a bitch.
Well, that is a shame. No one should feel guilty. Well, some people should.
They know what they did.
Do you mean the Jews?
No.
Uh-oh.
Of course not.
It's like, wow, this has suddenly turned racist. And that is certainly not the tone of this podcast.
Right, we only make fun of other white people here.
We don't.
Oh, they're the worst.
Un-PC things funny? Never. Never.
Yeah, no. You show me an old white guy, I'll show you an asshole.
That's the truth.
Crackers, God.
He said crackers, not cackle.
Oh. It's the hard K sound that throws me.
Anyway, thank you guys.
I swear you'll find me a Rob when you do that.
What?
Hey, would you?
David is trying to close the show. Jeez.
Thanks, everybody. See you next week.
I love you all. See you next time. Have a good weekend.
Bye, everyone. See you for number 52, 1 year.
Yep. Oh, and don't forget movie night coming up. Check it out. Join us. If you
movie missed, night.
Recommend a movie for the next one. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
If you wish to contact Devour the Podcast, you can reach us by email at CenobiteDave, that's CenobiteDave at gmail.com, or Maven1974 at gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter at D Delamorte, DDELLAMORTE, or Maven1974. To visit the site, go to devourthepodcast.blogspot.com. And now you can leave a message on our fancy new voicemail at 760-661-7280.
Boogeyman is real, it's real, and you found him.
We'll tear your soul apart.
What an excellent day for an exorcism.
Red Rob! Red Rob!
As you check with the children,
kill you all!
I'd be crazy if I kill you all!
I want to hear you scream.
Don't fall asleep.
What's your favorite scary movie?
I guess everyone's entitled to a fun good scare.
Sometimes.
Devour the